Hey, this is Chad Sakach. You're listening to the face-meltingly awesome Virtually Speaking podcast.
Let's do this.
What is virtualization?
You're going to learn today.
Innovate like a startup. Deliver like an enterprise.
I hope you're coffeeed up and ready because it's going to be a great day.
I know you're going to dig this.
Oh, yeah.
You're listening to the Virtually Speaking Podcast with Pedro Lero and John Nicholson.
Good afternoon and welcome to the Virtually Speaking Podcast, episode number 84. My name is Pete Fletcher, a.k.a. Pedro Arrow. John's out this week, and so joining me as co-host is Miles Gray. Miles, how you doing, sir?
Doing good, Pete. Just ramping up for VMworld now in a couple of weeks' time.
Ah, that's right. This is going to be your first VMworld as a VMware employee. So a little baptism by fire for you, huh?
Yeah. I'm the baby of the group, so I gotta take that lantern and run with it.
Yeah, it's a lot of work, but it's also a lot of fun. I mean, and plus you already know vSAN. So between all the customer meetings and all of the sessions that you do, it'll be exhausting, but it'll be a lot of fun.
I bet. Yeah, I think it's going to be a lot of fun. And it's always fun telling people about new stuff that really excites them. And, you know, getting feedback direct from the customers as to what you're doing is exactly what we want to see, that kind of thing. At least that's what I'm hoping they're going to say.
Yeah, for sure. Well, Miles, you picked a great week to join us because I know that in addition to being a vSAN expert, you also dabble in containers. And this week, we're going to talk about Pivotal Container Services, PKS. And joining us this week is someone no stranger to the podcast. You may know him from his days at EMC, Dell EMC, or even from his blog, virtualgeek.io. You may have seen him flying around in a Captain Canada costume, but now he's working at Pivotal, the one, the only Mr. Chad Sakach. Chad, welcome to the podcast.
Face-meltingly awesome.
Pedro, that is awesome.
Welcome back, Chad.
It's great to be here, Pete. And Miles, very nice to meet you. By the way, this year is going to be my 12th VMworld.
Nice.
They are all awesome.
Oh, yeah.
One of the things I love the most is seeing a lot of friends in the community at VMware, at customers. Only thing I'd say, guys, is a little bit of it's awesome to get the customers to say what you're doing is exactly what we want. What's even more face-meltingly awesome, in my opinion, is when they go, yeah, but I'd like you to do blank. And then you can grab the product team, you can grab the customer, and you can have a dialogue right then and there. And I've seen a lot of great, you know, tacks and turns made based on the stuff that happens at VMworld. So if you're a customer, if you're a partner, can't wait to see you. And we'll always, as always, we'll have Vodgeball before the party gets started.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. 2 points there. First and foremost, yes, I love having customer meetings at VMworld, especially the ones where they have either a question about a product or a suggestion for making the product better. And you can turn and say, oh, let me introduce you to the product manager, or even better, the developer, the person who actually wrote the software. That's one of the cool benefits of actually being at VMworld, is because you get to meet all the people that, you know, make up these great software programs. And so, yeah, that's very cool. The second point, Vodgeball. Yes, the VMware team, Sabotage. Well, we didn't do so great last year. We got knocked out the first round, but we will be back, and we're coming back with a vengeance.
I hope you're warming up that arm, Pete.
Yeah, all warmed up and ready to go. We'll see what happens. Anyway, Chad, let's talk some Pivotal Container Service. Now, I know you were at EMC for years and Dell EMC, but made a move recently over to Pivotal, and you're focusing on PKS, Pivotal Container Service.
Yeah, I am. You know, it's funny because, you know, as I was trying to think about what was the next, you know, chapter for me in my adventure, you know, I'd been at EMC and then Dell EMC for a while. In 2008, I kind of was tasked to bring EMC and VMware closer together. It was before vVols existed.
Yeah.
It was early days of iSCSI and NFS, and there was a lot to do. So I've always kind of bled VMware, but I also kind of have bled Pivotal too. And when I was thinking about what to do next, it was almost a toss-up. Do I go to VMware? Do I go to Pivotal? But yeah, I joined Pivotal on April the 1st, April Fool's Day. It's been fantastic. And I'm really pumped, man. Learning cool new stuff, working on PKS hand-in-hand with VMware. It's a 50-50 engineering project between Pivotal and VMware. So I kind of got to have my cake and eat it too.
Oh, yeah. And by the way, congratulations on the IPO, and the stock seems to be doing really well.
Yeah, it's really, really interesting you know, I'm sorry to ramble, Pete. You know me well enough to go, you gotta, you were like, whoa, Nelly, you gotta slow me down, right? But, you know, as a long time part of this little ecosystem, I've seen Pivotal for the last 7 years. So Pivotal was formed, a lot of people don't remember, but Paul Moritz was the CEO of VMware for some time.
Yeah.
And Paul kind of saw this wave of people developing new apps in new ways and using data in new ways. And we had been kind of acquiring a whole bunch of companies and as well as doing stuff organically. And Pivotal was first born out of a combo of organic stuff. So Cloud Foundry was first born within VMware. A lot of people don't know or remember that. It was this black sheep internal project that had nothing to do with software-defined data centers or infrastructure, you know, but a source of local, you know, internal innovation, organic innovation. And then there was stuff that came in from the outside. A long time VMware people may remember VFabric, which was a whole series of stuff that Paul had been kind of collecting within VMware when he was the CEO there. And Pivotal was born 7 years ago as a combination of those things plus Greenplum and a whole bunch of other stuff. And it's been a funky journey for the company, but going public, which was basically in May, you know, we're all grown up now. You know, we're servicing half the Fortune 500. You know, the business is going great, but it's a different universe. It's that stuff that's above the infra layer. And it's about where the infra intersects with that app dev and line of business. How do you build software better?
Yeah, so I have a question about that. Do you see the evolution of, software products being that, you know, does it feel more like we have, you know, quote unquote, solved infrastructure at this stage, and it's going to move, the development cycles are going to move more into app platforms as the new battlegrounds for companies?
So that's a good question, man. I wouldn't characterize the infra problems as solved. So I'd say that we have, even at the same time that we have very high maturity in some compute abstractions, namely kernel mode virtualization, VMware has led that charge. It's been an amazing journey and continues to be an amazing journey, but it's a pretty mature space. I would say that the software-defined storage space, which you guys are part of SABU, right? The storage and availability business unit,
yeah,
within VMware. I would say that's at its like kind of adolescent years. you know, again, people don't remember this because now, you know, vSAN 6.6 and subsequent releases is pretty mature and it's being widely deployed in HCI and in build-it-yourself forums and all sorts of customers. But holy smokes, people don't remember. That is still relatively new. Like vSAN didn't hit its stride until 6.2.
Oh yeah.
And you know, it wasn't so long ago that it was 5.5. And I even remember the kind of internal 4.0 and the 1.0. Right?
Yeah, exactly.
So you can imagine the software-defined storage domain is still kind of like an adolescent. And then you've got the networking domain, which I would say is still formative. Like, so it's not that NSXT and NSXV and the merger over time is like scary and new. It's maturing, right? But the rate of adoption and consumption is still, you know, people are still figuring it out. People are, you know, maybe it's because networking teams are kind of slow to change or whatever, but you know, it's still kind of getting there. And then at the same time that those things are maturing, there's new emergent spaces of infrastructure. I would describe Kubernetes as more of an infrastructure thing than a developer thing. And that means that, you know, whole new compute abstractions, you know, are containers aren't new, but containers in the enterprise are new. Kubernetes isn't new, but Kubernetes maturing and making it into the enterprise isn't new. Persistence volume controllers aren't new, but they're still definitely emergent.
Right.
So I wouldn't describe the infrastructure domain as being solved in any way, shape, or form. I think it's kind of, there's always cool stuff to learn and do. I do think, you know, if I think back a couple of VMworlds ago, we were doing a thing with Kit Colbert and others, and someone in the audience, it's like you could ask anything you wanted. And someone said like, hey, what should I do for my career? And my guidance at the time was focus on automation and management. And you know, that's where I see the biggest skill gap was 3-4 years ago. The place where there's the biggest skill gap now is in the same domain, but in the intersection of the developers and the infra. You know, if you wanted to be an automation super guru, you know, 2-3 years ago, you would have focused on Puppet and Ansible, which are still awesome and great. But if you wanted to focus on kind of undiscovered territory, you know, you'd look at tools that are automation using CI, CD pipelines, like Concourse and others.
That's an interesting point. And I think it sort of stands to reason that depending on who you ask, the word platform means different things to different people. Like, for example, if you ask a sysadmin what his platform is, he's going to say vSphere. If you ask a DevOps admin, it's going to be Kubernetes. But if you ask an app dev, they're going to say, well, it's Heroku or my CI/CD pipeline that I use.
Or they'll say something even higher, like Spring.
Exactly.
Right? So by the way, to me, the definition of platform is a line under which you don't build, you consume. And, you know, above it, it's a platform on top of which you build. So in other words, a platform defines, for any people or any function, it defines the tinkering boundary.
Right. I think I read this in your two-part series that you did whenever you moved to Pivotal. You had the same sort of analogy of a platform is below which it's a black box and you don't get to touch it.
Yep.
And that is sort of the way things should be going. That's the way consumers should be. Or customers should be looking to move their consumption models because it just makes life easier for everyone if it is like that.
Totally. Thank you for reading, Miles. That's very kind of you, bud.
No problem. One other thing that I picked up from it was you mentioned whenever you moved to Pivotal that you had read Kubernetes the Hard Way by Kelsey Hightower, which is a pretty low-level tutorial set. And obviously, you're quite, you know, your managerial exec sort of level. Is it important for you to really understand the nitty-gritty of those things? To be able to manage and oversee a glue role such as the one that you're in.
And Chad, before you answer that, Miles, I just want to make sure, are you inferring that managers are not technical?
I didn't say such a thing. I just think it's cool that Chad keeps up with these things.
Yeah, it's Miles. Yeah, thanks, man. So I did. And, you know, it was funny because I played with GKE. So if the first thing I did was say like, okay, what does an easy button look like? What does it look like if I'm consuming the platform? And I would say that GKE, out of all of the public clouds, is far and away the most mature Kubernetes container as a service. And it's interesting to see Amazon and Azure try to catch up with them in that domain. Again, each one of the public clouds has their own superpower. And then I was like, okay, if I've done that, then I have to do the Kelsey Hightower Kubernetes the Hard Way because it's the opposite. It's rooted personally in that I'm insanely curious. So I like doing that. It gives me some joy. I'm a nerd, so I love tinkering, and it's a reminder, frankly, of the challenges that people run into when they try to tinker below the platform line. And then it's also paranoia, Miles. So my greatest nightmare, like I wake up screaming, is that eventually I lose my technical mojo as a senior exec.
I've lost someone placed up the chump on you, and you're standing on stage, and you don't know the answer.
Well, and you know, like there's the business decisions that you have to make are all linked to technology decisions. So, like for example, with PKS 1.1 came out. Basically, it got released on June the 28th. And the team, the combined VMware and Pivotal product team, literally yesterday, we were looking at the tracker for the 1.2 payload, right? Which is the next major release. We've got PKS kind of marching on this cadence of just stay in sync with Kubernetes upstream releases. And that means that we're releasing every month. And then there's big releases every 3 months. So it's a very frequent release train. And we're going through a call where we're looking at the payload, like what are we going to be aiming to get done? What will be experimental and whatnot? And, you know, I'm in there representing the business and the customers with the product team, the engineering, R&D, and product management team. And, you know, it's very useful to be able to keep technical because the technology is super central. But, you know, you get into debates about, is adding native AWS support going to be easy or hard? And what does that do to the QA and test harness and the risk for other associated features or functions? And being able to not out-engineer the engineering team, but to kind of be able to participate. I don't know. I think business leaders need to be able to do it.
That's pretty awesome. And man, keeping up with a Kubernetes cadence of like monthly releases, that's pretty aggressive, which made me wonder, and I think I know the answer to this already, considering PKS, the K stands for Kubernetes. But in the battle of the container managers, is it done? Is it definitely Kubernetes? Because I felt like, you know, a few years ago, I probably would have thought it was going to be Docker. But not only Docker, I mean, AWS has their own container service. Apache has Mesos. What is it, Mesos? I mean, there's quite a few different container services out there. So is it done? I mean, does everybody agree that it is Kubernetes?
So I'm going to be uncharacteristically short and say, I think that the container cluster manager orchestration layer battle has really been won and Kubernetes has won that. I don't think Docker has lost per se. Docker container images remain kind of the enterprise standard for the container standard. And I think a lot of people conflated the container standard with the cluster manager standard battle. Ultimately, it does mean, you know, it's a lot more challenging for Docker as a company because, frankly, the container standard itself is less valuable to customers than how you manage and orchestrate the containers. It's for the same reason that, you know, vSphere as a plot, you know, you can get ESXi for free, right? You know, the core kernel mode VM itself has been somewhat commoditized. The question is, how does the platform work? The platform battle, I think, has been won. And man, I wouldn't have called this 2-3 years ago, Miles. Like I would have said Docker would have won and Swarm would have won. Then I would have said maybe it's going to be Mesosphere with Mesos.
Or DCOS or any of those kind of, yeah. There was a lot of them going around for a while. For me personally, I think the writing was on the wall when Docker released an Edge build with Kubernetes built into it as their container orchestrator.
And then you saw Mesosphere kind of line up too. And, you know, and again, there as technologists, we look at it through the technology lens. There's a certain critical mass where you see a community kind of coalesce around something. And people get really excited, but often forget that in the early innings, you know, if you want to use a soccer analogy, right? Like just look at the England versus Croatia game. The first half was very different than the second half. And, right. You know, the double overtime, you know, was pretty close. You know, if you think about the early days where people were like, oh my God, VMware is going to get commoditized by Hyper-V, didn't come to pass. Well, maybe OpenStack and KVM will take over the world. It looked like maybe that was, nope, that didn't come to pass. It's all going to be, everything's going to move to Docker. There was so much ink spent on that, you know, and here we are now where I'd say, yes, Kubernetes has become the de facto standard. And I wrote something else on this where I'm like, the pattern that I see is that as soon as something becomes boring, you know, it actually starts to become the most important.
I think a lot of our listeners are maybe vaguely familiar with containers and Kubernetes and things like that. But PKS is sort of a different tack on it, I guess, where people are like, well, I can spin up a Kubernetes cluster myself. You know, I'll deploy a couple of Ubuntu VMs. We'll put kubelets on there. And it'll just run. But the way I sort of explain PKS and these kind of services to people is PKS does for Kubernetes clusters what Kubernetes does for containers, in that it's a desired state configuration manager for the cluster itself. Would you say that's a fair sort of sum up of what it does, what it is?
I'm going to use that, Miles. That's a great state example. You know, the reality that we've seen is that it's very, very important for Pivotal and for VMware. Each one of us is leading, you know, the world in our own domains. VMware in kind of the software-defined data center abstraction, you know, both on and off premises. Pivotal's been leading the world in the higher order PaaS abstraction, so above containers. So you know, whether it's Pivotal application services, whether it's what we do with Spring, things that, you know, are invisible to infra teams, but the developer would say, yes, that's my platform. for both companies, the intersection of kind of the container universe can be looked at as either infra up, so the DevOps view of infra, or it can actually be looked at the app dev platform down. We basically came to a decision that says, wow, we've really kind of got to lead the way here. Well, what does lead the way look like for us, for VMware, for Pivotal? And what we realized is what lead the way looks like is not to try to out Kubernetes Google, which is ridiculous because Google is the dominant contributor user and has the most experience with Kubernetes. And frankly, they lead the charge. And not just around Kubernetes, but emerging areas like Istio that are built on top of Kubernetes, right? What we should do is we should focus on making it dial tone. We should focus on making it easy, ready for everything that the enterprise needs. So how do we make it so that PKS has everything that you need? You don't have to assemble it. It has an embedded OS. It has a desired state and configuration model that is declarative, which means that you can take those, you can pop out Kubernetes clusters, and in practice, customers don't have one giant Kubernetes cluster. In practice, they have many. And so how do you then not only pop them out, but how do you update them? Because Kubernetes releases come every 3 months. So how do you just do that frequently? How do we solve the problems of the networking domain and integrate in the networking domain and make it simple and easy? How do we make the container registry with everything that a customer needs and wants around HA, around complex security models, simple and easy? How do we embed that? That's Harbor. How do we solve the persistence volume controller problems? And how do we make all of that with the observability and the logging that customers want and need? And how do we make it so that it's not a science project? Because Kubernetes is still early in enterprise. To date, large enterprises that are using Kubernetes, it's held together by duct tape, bubblegum, and people that are rock stars. And rock stars are awesome, but they're also single points of failure.
Do you think that the Kubernetes has sort of grown to be accepted, even though it is, granted, it is the most mature container orchestrator? It is still lacking, obviously, in some places, for the enterprise, which is where solutions like PKS come in. But do you think it's sort of one, given each public cloud and on-prem solution brought out their own sort of Kubernetes flavor, that meant it's, if you're modernizing your applications, say, you want to rewrite them for containers or even FAS, you want to have a common platform so you're not tied into, say, you know, Amazon Lambda or a particular container service, that you take your code and you ship it once around all these different public clouds because it's the same underlying platform, as it were.
So that is a funny story. So early on, so PaaS, so the Pivotal Application Service, was a higher order abstraction, is currently multi-cloud. Around 60% of PaaS deployments point to vSphere, and the remaining 40% point to other IaaS, public cloud, so AWS, Azure, GCP, and so on and so forth. So in other words, PaaS is already a multi-cloud abstraction, and a lot of customers dig it for all the reasons that you say, Miles, which is they want to have a single operational model that they can deploy to multiple clouds. Now, to the VMware audience listening in, you can apply that at a lower level at the IaaS layer. And the VMware Managed Cloud on AWS is an example of that, right? In the early days of VMC, I got into lots of quote-unquote bar fights with people at VMware where I was like, I'm not sure if I get it. Like, why would a customer want an IaaS on a public cloud? Why wouldn't they just use the native IaaS? And people at VMware said, Chad, we think that the customers will really want the idea of a common, consistent control layer. Not always, but for a lot of use cases. And it turns out that that was correct. So when we started PKS, it was about a year ago. People at VMworld that have been to VMworld last year will remember kind of the kind of public on stage announcement. Google was there. We actually had Amazon there as well, talking about VMC, and Pivotal and VMware were up on stage saying, "Hey, we're going to do this." So a year ago, announcement, first release February, so about 6 months later. Second release, you know, big 1.2 release is in at the end of June. And then the next 1.2 will be, you know, kind of roughly about 3 months from now, like I said. So you can see a really fast cadence there. But at the time of the birth, the first debates were occurring about, will PKS be multi-cloud? In other words, will people want, like there's a clear need for an on-premises easy button dial tone for Kubernetes for the enterprise. Check. That's our first target. And the first thought was, just like my original argument against, you know, VMC, was people will just natively use the Kates variants from the public cloud. So GKE, and we knew that, you know, EKS and AKS were coming, right? So they'll use those because, hey, it's just Kubernetes. They're all the same. As long as they're conformant with the Kates APIs, you know, Bob's your uncle, you're off to the races. Why the hell would anybody want PKS on AWS? And we originally had PKS supporting GCP and vSphere. GCP because there's a tight affinity with GKE and their open service broker projects and a whole bunch of other stuff. We were like, let's just see how the market responds and whether or not we should prioritize this multi-cloud thing. And the customer response over the last 6 months has been overwhelming. They absolutely want to have a consistent Kubernetes that is cross-cloud. So, you know, we've learned a lot, and that is guiding our prioritization for the next phase. It doesn't mean that customers are not going to use the native Kubernetes abstractions from the public clouds. Not at all. In fact, they are today, and they're using it, you know, in volume. But there's a lot of customers who are like, yeah, what we've realized is that while they're all conformant with, you know, Kubernetes to some degree, they're different. You know, like in some cases, they have different observability, different logging, different management models. In some cases, they say, we leave dealing with the workers up to you. In some cases, they say, no, we deliver it as a service. And short answer to your question, Miles, is hell yeah. But the long answer is just this kind of observation of, you know, similar to the earlier dialogue over the container cluster managers, like you can't, it's okay for us all to have our opinions about this stuff, but it's, you learn a lot by doing. We have learned that yes, people want to have as much as possible common control, common abstractions on and off-prem. And they're realizing that while they will use native APIs and data services and other surfaces and functions from public clouds that are proprietary or cloud unique, that as much as possible, they want to try to have common control.
So coming back to the common abstraction theme, again, I guess there's a couple of evolutions going on within the app development world at the minute, if you want to call it that. You've got the container movement, but on top of the container movement, you've got the FaaS movement as well. People that are wanting to run stuff on like OpenFaaS or Lambda or whatever it is. Do you think there is room for a commoditization of a FaaS layer as well, a la PFS, I think it's called?
Yeah. Yep. So, boy, you're asking good questions, Miles. The short answer is yes. And again, there's a tendency for people to get into ridiculously dogmatic positions where they think that one abstraction is the way for everything, right? Just because that's what they love, it's a particular tool or whatever, right? If you take a step back and you think about this, a kernel mode VM can be thought of as an abstraction where you say, give me your OS image. So an OVA is an OS image, very familiar to everybody who's a, you know, VMware admin, right? A container platform can be thought of as, give me your container image. So give me your Docker image. I will store it in this registry. Give me a Helm chart to figure out how I need to manage the infrastructure underneath it. But give me my container image. I don't care what's inside the container. Just like with the VM, I don't care what's inside the OS, right?
Right. It's just give me the runtime.
Right. Give me the container image and I will take care of it, right? The next higher order thing is give me your source code. So this is PaaS, right? Where you go and you say, give me your Spring code, give me your .NET code, and I will take care of everything from there. I will build the container. I will build the load balancer. I will do everything. That's a PaaS platform, right? And then the a higher order abstraction, in my opinion, from that is FAS, which basically says, just call my function, right? So now there's a couple of just general rules of thumb. Number one, the more you can use a higher order abstraction, the more the platform is doing for you, and therefore the more time you have to do other stuff, right? So in general, using higher order abstractions provides more value to do things that matter. So moving up the abstraction chain is really, really important. I'm going to do a blog on this in the next few days. I've been trying to pound this out. However, the reality of it is that the number of workloads that are fit, you know, decreases as you move up the abstraction curve. So when people get into bar fights about it's all going to be one or all the other, they're wrong. It's going to be, you're going to have kernel mode VMs, you're going to have containers, you're going to have platforms and functions. Now, what we're trying to do in that domain is there's OpenWhisk, there's Riff, there's a million things, and it's fast and furious. It's kind of like the container world was a couple of years ago before it started to coalesce. We think that there is a window, and again, a lot of people don't know this, but basically Spring Riff, which is a Dell Technologies family thing, right? It's part of Pivotal, is the dominant event-driven function, event-driven or functions or as a service. There's words that mean something very, very, very similar within the enterprise. Just like, you know, you would say that Lambda is the dominant public cloud function as a service today. And it's an area where there's a lot of possibilities for us to take Pivotal Function Services, which right now is kind of a twinkle in our eye, just like PKS was a year ago. And there, by the way, there's really cool VMware projects on this topic too, and say, how do we contribute? How do we coalesce? How do we make PFS simple, easy, industrialized dial tone functions that are multi-cloud?
Right. And it's interesting that you say there's going to be this mixture of, like you said, kernel mode VMs, containers, functions. All these things are going to exist within this like one enterprise's ecosystem feasibly. So it almost comes to the question of, well, the messaging layer between these things is the next point of, well, we need to figure out some sort of common way for these things to talk to each other that democratizes it and just makes it easier for everyone that's involved.
Yeah, the how things talk to one another is an area of a ton of work. And it's one of the biggest challenges, frankly, within the customer base today. And that how things talk is both at the networking layer. So for example, a fascinating thing is, like, currently, you know, ingress routing and those sorts of things inside the Kubernetes ecosystem is an area of a ton of work. And how do you network not only a bunch of Kubernetes clusters together, but how do you network it to a bunch of things that are kernel mode VMs? How do you network it to a customer's existing OpenStack thing over to the side over here? Right. Even though OpenStack in the enterprise is kind of like on the decline, it still exists. And so there's open source projects like Gimbal and others that do that. And then there's higher order things that say, how do we create a services mesh? How do we create a service mesh between these various things, and how do we do that not only within Kubernetes but more broadly? And that's what projects like Istio are all about.
Right. And it's not just TCP/IP; it's other things that run on top of that we mean whenever right. We're talking about communication.
But just to be clear, right? This is stuff where it's fun to learn and play. And as the vendor ecosystem for our customers, we've got to support them and build and innovate. But they are those topics are not at the dial tone phase yet.
Right.
So Chad, I know that you've been a longtime infrastructure guy, but I'm curious, as we move, you know, with containers and stuff, as we move up the application stack, how important is infrastructure? Does it really matter anymore?
So can I say a very light swear word on your podcast?
Sure, I think we can handle it.
So there is a tendency, and I've even heard this from within my Pivotal brothers and sisters, my fellow pivots, where sometimes they're dismissive of infra. And often that's common of the app dev domain. Anyone who says that it's bullshit. It is flat out bullshit, right? So if I look at where some of our biggest projects go sideways, it's because the infra is either too expensive, too rigid, not programmable enough. And you know, when you look at basically a design of a very, very modern cloud native platform and Kubernetes platform, if you don't design the underlying infra, the vSphere clusters, to properly support A, load, B, to create the proper fault domain isolation, so multi-AZ designs, if you don't think about the networking automation, if you don't think about how you do the overall elasticity of the infrastructure, in other words, how do you make it so that it's relatively easy to add or remove capacity, where capacity could be compute, storage, networking, whatever. What ends up happening is, in most customers, the consumers start to get really frustrated, and meaning the app teams, and then they start to say, well, I'll use the public cloud, or I'll use things like PaaS on GCP. And then the project goes fast because they're no longer dealing with this kind of like rigidity of infrastructure. But then all of a sudden, the project goes like, it's a record scratch. And it's like, there's certain workloads for economics or governance reasons where it's got to come back on premises. And then the developer is pissed again because now they're like being told you can't do what you like doing. So just for what it's worth, the answer is infrastructure is hella important. And the things that I would say is that doing it in a way where it's software defined, therefore it's programmable. vSAN clusters are way easier to expand and scale than traditional storage models. And I'm saying that as a longtime former, you know, EMC person, but EMC and Dell EMC and VMware are all in on software-defined storage models. Doesn't mean that arrays go away, right? But infrastructure is really important. And it always will be.
It's the composability of the infrastructure as well, which matters. Like, for example, in PKS, PKS runs on a project that came out of VMware called Hatchway, which is open source. You can get it on GitHub. And that enables Kubernetes admins to define within their Kubernetes YAML files, the configs, what storage class they want. So, for example, you might have a fast tier, a highly redundant, whatever it is. They can just deploy that or specify that within their Kubernetes config, and it'll take care of the vSAN work on the back end without any admin intervention, which just, because anytime you have to deal with talking to a person, it slows stuff down, which is why developers get frustrated.
And Hatchway is really cool, and it's a long evolution of VMware kind of contributing kind of around and under the container ecosystem. I'd encourage anybody who's looking at basically containers on vSphere to take a look at it. And all you need to do is just Google Hatchway VMware and you'll find it. It's really cool. And again, people don't, infra does matter. So for example, this is a real world customer example. They're going, okay, I have now got container multi-master, multi-AZ failover. That's a Kubernetes thing that says, I've got multiple vSphere clusters that create multiple Kubernetes clusters that create multiple availability zones. And I've got a master server where there's three of them, and I can withstand failure of an availability zone, and containers are automatically going to get restarted. Fantastic. Now, containers always, their local storage is ephemeral. So when you restart it, you should never write to a file system inside a container if you expect it to survive, right? But it's just not kosher because containers should not have persistence in them. But the reality of it is that there's many workloads inside the container that either need to have a high performance volume or they need to have some form of persistence that isn't an object store. And so you're like, okay, great. I'm going to have a volume that shows up inside that container. And great, now I can hack it together. But then the question becomes, if my container gets restarted over here, will that volume show up?
Yeah, and it's not a trivial problem to solve.
So Hatchway does that. And you know, again, there's a lot of volume controllers out there and everyone's got their favorite. But it's an example of like, these are the things that customers are like, look, I want the easy button because I want it to be a platform. I want it to give me dial tone. You know, I just want to consume it so I can do stuff that matters more. And that's an area of intense focus for us.
Yeah, that's the whole point, right? It really does sum up what Pivotal is all about. I saw a video online on YouTube, actually. It was a video of one of your dev team guys. I forget his name, but it was about how Pivotal helps you become a more modern software company. And he had a really cool analogy. It was about the bridge building process. And what he said was, you know, the upfront money to pay for the architects and the planning, and then the actual building of a bridge, there's huge upfront costs, and the gap between the cost and the actual value, there's a lot of risk there. And so with companies like Pivotal, it sort of takes away all of that upfront investment because they're getting you to a place where you can actually start to provide your own value as opposed to just getting the infrastructure up and running. So really, really cool video.
It is one of the coolest speeches, in my humble opinion. And the guy who presented it, his name's Onsi Fakhouri. O-N-S-I, last name F-A-K-H-O-U-R-I. And you can find it on YouTube, so just go and watch it. It was at Spring One, which is like the developer version of VMworld, the Spring One Summit. And it's what's so cool when you're watching the video, because Onsi like nailed it. It was so good, is he's presenting on stage in front of a big audience, and I know Onsi, and he's like this kind of like quiet and introspective guy, and not at all like this great, you know, public speaker. And, you know, his PhD was in, you know, dark matter and astrophysics. And, you know, he's so smart, but he really, really, one of the things that is the hardest things to do is to make something clear and relatable and to everybody, right? And that particular speech was so good. I'd really encourage people to check it out.
Yeah, for sure. Well, I'll definitely leave a link to it on the show notes of this podcast. Chad, I know you're going to be at VMworld. You already told us that. So any secret information you want to share with us? What do you got up your sleeves for VMworld?
Well, I got to keep some surprises in store, fellas, but we have got lots of big news. There's going to be big news on the PKS front. You know, our baby is now a year old from the announcement. So where do we stand? We got a ton of stuff going on inside the ecosystem around it that I think will be really cool. There's about 30 sessions that are going on the topic of cloud native, developer ready infrastructure, the intersection with NSXT, how to use Concourse pipelines to do platform updates, and then frankly, you know, Pete kicking your ass at Vodgeball.
Yeah, you got that right. Sabotage coming for you, Chad. All right, well, that Vodgeball-themed sabotage music tells me it's time to go. And so if you want to get in touch with us, send us an email at podcast@vmware.com. Subscribe to us on your podcast app of choice by searching Virtually Speaking Podcast. Catch all the episodes at vspeakingpodcast.com. Thank you, Chad, for joining us. Thank you, Miles, for co-hosting. And for the rest of you, we'll see you next week. But until then, bye for now.
Face meltingly awesome.
See.
Oh yeah.
Enough of this jibber jabber.